Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
What is this? This is Tech News Today for Thursday, June 23rd, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox, which just turned your iPad into a television. Look at it. Slingbox introduces their new iPad app, so now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Check it out at Best Buy or slingbox.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
We've had a busy day.
We have.
We were, just full disclosure, we were up at a private event in San Francisco where we were on stage talking.
They gave us bagels and coffee, too.
They plied us.
It's true. Full disclosure, bagels with cream cheese.
No, Google was nice enough to ask the whole Tech News Today team to come up and talk to their internal meeting thingy. It was fun.
It was really fun. I would do that more often. Yeah. Talk to a bunch of nice Google people. They're all like nice and casual. It's easy to talk
to. Talk to our audience. You know, they're not
in
too
fact,
formal either.
So. After today's show, I think we should talk to our audience. Let's do that.
Okay.
All right. Let's start with some news, though. We will talk about the Nokia Windows Phone leak. We will talk about the ISPs adopting a graduated response to piracy, possibly. But we're going to start with Tesla discontinuing the Roadster. They will stop taking orders for the sporty version of the Tesla, the Roadster, in about two months, and switch their focus to the Model S electric sedan. Tesla has reported they've sold about 1,650 Roadsters worldwide by the end of April, and the car is sold in North America, Europe, and Asia. If you've been saving up that $185,000 to buy yourself I'm awesome from, you know, ICANN, you might want to take $109,000 of that and put it towards Tesla Roadster while you still can.
This is kind of sad. I mean, Tesla was trying to make electric cars cool. They had this Lotus-based Roadster. It seemed like, hey, that's the first electric car that didn't look like, I don't know, a little wedge. I mean, this was a really pretty car. And so to move to the sedans, and I guess this makes sense, because who could afford $109,000 for a car, especially in this day and age? For $58,000, instead of getting a Volt, you could get one of these sedans. So it makes a lot of sense why they would do it in this economy.
A friend of mine has a Roadster, and I mean, no doubt about it, it is one of the awesomest experiences ever. You feel like you're in a Batmobile. But it's just not, this is, if Tesla is serious about the greater public adopting an electric version of a car, and it's something that people get used to and use on a regular basis, that is not it. That is a fun for, you know, once in a blue moon rich person.
And the first Model S sedans are even more expensive than the base model. You talked about $58,000 will be the base model. The first ones will have an estimated driving range of 300 miles. That's more than the base model, which only has 160. And the price tag's closer to $80,000. So you still have to have a little money in your pocket. You want to get one of these.
Right. If this move works for them, they could probably expand, eventually go back with a new Roadster or something like that. I mean,
car
companies
right.
have discontinued models a lot of times and brought them back. I've seen things like the Mustang and the Camaro and all kinds of things.
They have a pretty solid business here. Their plan was come out with the splashy car, get a lot of attention, then shift to a more practical car, which is what they're doing. But they also have a business partnership with Toyota to produce the plug-in electric version of the RAV4, which they do now down in Fremont, California. And they also provide batteries for Daimler. For the electric versions of the Smart 4.2 mini car.
Yeah, it was right. When the Toyota plant closed in Fremont, it was like people were lamenting, oh, there's so many jobs lost, and then Tesla took that back. So they actually helped stimulate the growth. You know who has a Model S on order is friend of TNT, David Prager.
Does Prager have a Model S?
He sure does. He's been waiting a long time.
We'll have to get him to take us for a ride.
About 18 months.
You know, the Model S seats 7.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't know because he's still waiting for his.
It doesn't have it
but,
yet.
But, yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get a test drive.
All right. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings has been asked to join Facebook's board of directors, I say with a raised eyebrow.
Why?
I don't know, because it's Facebook and Netflix, like, all partnering up.
Yeah.
Now, just to put this in perspective, Facebook's board currently consists of, course, Mark Zuckerberg, Mark Andreessen of Andreessen Horowitz, the Netscape guy, you might know him as, Jim Breyer of Accel Partners, Washington Post CEO Donald Graham, and Peter Thiel of Clarium Capital. He's the guy that says, don't go to college, just go
have fun and
get experience. So, I mean, just the fact that Hastings is joining the board doesn't mean that Facebook and Netflix are suddenly going to share everything any more than the fact that Don Graham is on the board means the Washington Post and Facebook are in bed together. But there are some ties there already. This certainly doesn't weaken them.
Yeah, I mean, Reed Hastings has been quite active. I mean, he's the CEO. He's the founder of Netflix. And the idea was to get Netflix on every device. And it's almost ubiquitous. It's everywhere. So for him to join Facebook in any capacity, it seems like because Netflix has had such a failed social structure, they had their Netflix friends system that failed. This makes a lot of sense. And I think, they've talked about integrating Facebook into Netflix before. And this is a great way to get your foot in the door for those negotiations.
Yeah, I think earlier in the year when Netflix said, we're going to have Facebook integration, it was regarded as sort of like a not tomorrow, but 5-year plan type of a thing. But to have him now on Facebook's board makes it all the more realistic.
And Rapscallion in the chat room points out, absolutely true, Reed Hastings already on the board of Microsoft, which owns a stake in Facebook. So Reed wants to put Netflix on every device, it seems like Reed wants to be on everybody's board.
Well, Reed Hastings, he and Netflix uses Silverlight. I mean, that's Microsoft technology for streaming video. So maybe he's more influenced by companies he works with like this.
Anyway, it's certainly intriguing. We're certainly going to see more partnerships between Facebook and Netflix. I don't know if we'll end up calling him Faceflix.
Not yet.
The way Ed from Canada suggests. Yet. Google is facing a subpoena. I bet they'd rather be facing a Chipino, but they're not. They're facing a subpoena from the Federal Trade Commission. At least that's the report. According to the Wall Street Journal, they're on the verge of serving Google as part of a formal antitrust investigation into Google's web dominance in advertising, investigating whether Google has been directing search users to its own services over the competition. This is similar to complaints currently being investigated in the European Union. We've talked about this before. If Google does prefer its own services, doesn't it have the right to do that? I mean, if I run a newspaper, I take advertisements, but I can promote my own stuff in the front page over the advertisements, can't I?
Yeah, I mean, or a television channel runs promos for their own channel.
Is it wrong for them to run the news promo first in the block instead?
Can you imagine NBC running some sort of a commercial for a new ABC show?
Well, antitrust law isn't my expertise at all, but I know a little bit about it to the point where if Google has like a monopoly or like a perceived monopoly, or their numbers are great, let's say they were like 90% of the market, let's say that was the case, then yeah, it's almost as if they're the de facto search. They have to kind of open up because that's what everyone's using.
Well, there's bigger problems at that point. They're a freaking monopoly, and then they run into what Microsoft ran into on the desktop. But in May, Comscore estimated Google U.S. search share at 65.4%. It's over 50%. But it's certainly far from 90.
That's the question, though, is like if they're focusing, if the FTC is focusing on the way they're serving up ads, or they're talking about just the kind of influence Google has on everyone's lives is just kind of ridiculous at this point. I mean, everyone uses them. Or 65% maybe doesn't rise to the level of a monopoly, but it depends on when the FTC is looking. Actually, are they looking at a time period? Are they looking at May's month, their numbers, or when?
Right. Well, that's a good point. I mean, at one time, Google was, if not at 90, certainly very near 90, the share has declined slowly over the past several years, but it's still very dominant. I wonder if Microsoft, who has filed one of these complaints in the EU, feels comfortable saying, yeah, Google totally stomps all over Bing on the one hand, while on the other hand trying to show that they're gaining share and they have 30% of the market.
That's the problem with the Google is too dominant argument, is that we've seen how Bing, for example, has been chipping away at what Google is very good at. So, I mean, if it was rising in dominance and just going to take over, and that's kind of the general consensus, that would be one thing. But I see them just having more competition as we go on rather than less.
I think it does make sense to investigate. I absolutely do. Because what you want to find out is there an abusive practice? Like, it doesn't just come down to total market share. You want to find out, look, if I want to have an effective advertisement, yeah, they only have 65%, but that 65% ends up being the only reasonable place to buy an ad, which means they're the majority of the ad market as far as influence and results. So I'm stuck. And if every time I buy an ad on them, they put their ad for a competing service above me, because remember, Google isn't just a search engine. They also own a bunch of other stuff. Then that could be antitrust. If I'm a travel agency and now they own ITA and all of a sudden Google Travel comes up above me every time I buy a travel advertisement, that there might be something there.
I mean, don't forget, Microsoft had the same kind of problem with operating systems, right? And they just had to show that they were competitors out there. And that's partially why they funded Apple for a while. They gave them $100 million. So if there's competition out there, probably won't be an antitrust problem.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Slingbox, introducing their new iPad app. You can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. I've watched it, my home TV from California in Illinois. Of all places. You wouldn't think they'd get television out there, but they do. We always did, actually. But now I can watch the stuff on my DVR half a continent away. You can, too. All you do is you plug your Slingbox into an internet device, or an internet connection, I mean, and then you plug that into your cable TV or your satellite TV or whatever you get, and everything you subscribe to, every television bit that you pay for, is available to you anywhere you have an internet connection. Check it out at slingbox.com/twit or pop into a Best Buy to see a demo. Slingbox and your home TV appearing on iPads everywhere. Okay, let's get in to what is a leak. You decide whether this is a leak or not. Stephen Elop, speaking to I haven't been able to figure out what kind of crowd of people, makes a big deal about telling everyone to turn off your cameras. I'm going to show you something special. And then he pulls out what looks like a Nokia N9, but starts to go, but there's something different about this. It's got another button. And check this out. Look what else it does. It runs Windows Phone 7.
Wow.
This is C-Ray.
He even tells someone to put their camera away right before he starts showing it. Like, he tells you not to pull out your cameras and then specifically points out one person who should do that.
Yeah, but so, there are two other people who are holding their cameras up, obviously above the heads of people far enough that they can actually see what's going on. And we're watching a video that it must have been taken from the switched camera that was being operated, because they went from a wide shot of Elop to a close-up of the phone.
It was a wink-wink, put your cameras away.
It was either a wink-wink, put your cameras away, or you all put your cameras away because we're going to leak this footage ourselves later.
Yeah.
But so, what do you think of the phone? C-Ray, Nokia N9, we were kind of
like
raving about it.
It looks a lot like the N9. I think it's got a slightly different array on the back. The camera's slightly
different. LED placement
LED's
on the back.
LED's different on the
and
back.
And has one additional button that they think is for the shutter control.
I mean, it looks good. I mean, we like the N9. That was a nice piece of hardware. I'm just kind of curious if Nokia has done any customizations to Windows Phone 7. Like, they showed some pretty cool swiping things on Mego just the other day. So I wonder if they have the leeway with Microsoft to customize Windows Phone 7, because they do have a special deal. So maybe they have this cool, you know, swipe up and move across for applications.
It's hard to know how that would be integrated, though, because Windows, with the tiles, I mean, is so unique. Mm-hmm. I can't see it acting too much like the Mego version that we looked at. But you never know. People seem to love this hardware. I mean, if it's the same body, I can see this doing well.
And I think I figured out what Nokia is doing, because a lot of people, when the Mego phone was announced, when the N9 was announced, it's like, why? Why would you do this?
Yeah.
But I think what happened is they had the N9 already in production before they decided to go Windows Phone. Elop said, I want to put a phone out by the end of the year. They probably looked at it and said, well, we've got the N9. It's a great piece of hardware. We're already in development on Mego. Go ahead and put it out on Mego, because it'll get out faster, but let's also work on turning that piece of hardware into a Windows Phone compatible device.
Right.
And that makes sense. You've got a nice piece of hardware like that. Why not get a little splash, get people interested in it? Maybe the ones who aren't as into Mego will be sold once they see the Windows Phone version.
I'm just thinking, if that's the same piece of hardware, dual booting on a little device like that, why not?
Well, it's not exactly the same piece of hardware, but hey, yeah.
It could be.
Somebody ought to be able to figure that out. On to a major development in copyright enforcement here in the United States. It's kind of complicated, too. Four of the largest ISPs in the United States are on the verge of approving a deal with the RIAA and the MPAA that would require ISPs to enforce one of three options after sending several notices about alleged copyright infringement. Now, there's no judicial oversight here. RIAA and the MPAA can say anybody's violating copyright. The ISPs then send a letter advising people that they're breaking the law. They can determine how many times. It's not a three strikes law. The ISP can determine how many times they send it before they implement one of three possible options. One is that they would limit your connection to only the top 200 websites. Don't know how they figure that out.
Yeah, right.
What the top 200 are. They could throttle your bandwidth and say, well, you're going to be able to surf the web, but not as fast. Until you stop the pirating, and possibly, you know, in conjunction with these other two, sending you to copyright re-education school, presumably operated by the RIAA and the MPAA. Now, the story that Greg Sandoval has suggests that AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, the RIAA, the MPAA are the key negotiators here. I'm not sure who the fourth ISP is in this, but the White House is apparently also involved in encouraging these discussions. The key thing here is you've got the ISPs finally on board to doing policing, which they have resisted before, and there is no judicial review. You get accused, you have no appeal but to talk to your ISP. However, it's all private action, right? So they make this part of your terms of service. You have to agree to it.
There's so many variables here. I don't know where to start. Top 200 websites, what, like Alexa ratings? What are the top 200 websites here?
Your top 200 websites? What,
are you getting something in the mail, you know, that's like, has like a special seal saying infringement, you know, and you don't check your mail? Or I don't know how they're getting a hold of everybody. And they get to choose what your punishment is. You know, you have to go to, like, copyright traffic school.
Yeah.
Can you do that online?
I'm curious how exactly, if these companies are working together, are they, is this just, like, best practices? This is how we should do this? So, like, if AT&T says, man, we don't want to do it, what is the consequence to them as the ISP?
Well, and also, what does the ISP get out of this? I know what the industry gets out of it. They get some actually not that effective copyright enforcement procedure, but at least they get something. What is the ISP? What is being left out here? Because if I'm AT&T, Verizon, or Comcast, I'm not doing this unless there's a benefit for me, and I haven't actually seen any report on that.
And they're actually sharing the cost with the record labels as well. So they're actually paying partially for this as well.
Exactly. They're not going to do that for free.
No, exactly.
I mean, the biggest problem right now is that you can be stuck with one ISP in one location. This kind of thing wouldn't bother me if, for some reason, all the pipes were open. So if I had one fiber to the curb and I could go to Verizon or RCN or Comcast, or I can just switch them like that, that'd be fine. But this kind of stuff is troublesome because you have this limited availability in any given area. Because what's your option if you don't like these companies? Get a satellite? Go to dial-up? Like, what else do you do at this point?
And it's basically moving policing into the private sector, which I don't think is a good idea. Absent that, you know, like you're right. The marketplace might work this out because people just wouldn't sign up for ISPs that are going to join this if you had competition. But as it is, you're basically abandoning due process because due process doesn't apply to the private sector.
Or maybe the ISPs are like, let's see some infringers so we can throttle some bandwidth.
They don't have to put in bandwidth caps. You may be right.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as what the Danish police are proposing, though. On a side note, they have proposed abolishing all anonymous internet access under the rubric of fighting terrorism. ISPs and companies would be required to gather proof of identity. You'd have to show your ID before you could get an internet connection. A coffee shop? Wi-Fi? I have to show my ID? I'd like to get some free Wi-Fi. Here's my ID. Yeah,
that's I'm just, not a bot.
So that's in the could-be-worse category.
Is it like pass a CAPTCHA?
Meanwhile, the FBI read a vast worldwide raid called Operation Trident Tribunal to shut down two scareware organizations. The raids took place in 12 countries, including Ukraine, Latvia, Germany, Netherlands, Cyprus, France, Lithuania, Romania, Canada, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and, of course, the United States. They seized 40 computers. The raid in Latvia resulted in not only seizing five bank accounts for one of the organizations, but the arrests of Peter Sahurvos and Marina Maslobojeva, who are alleged to be the operators of one of the scam organizations. One of the organizations was the old free virus scan website trick where they say, hey, download this free virus scan, and then it owns your computer and you have to pay money to get your computer fixed again. The one that actually resulted in the bank seizures in Latvia and the two arrests was was a malvertising scam where they buy advertising on legitimate sites, and then once the ad is accepted, then they switch out the code so that there's malware in there.
How long until the Oxford Dictionary adds scareware and malvertising into the...
I kind of like malvertising.
That's a new one. Silly. I haven't heard that one before.
Also in the raid, the FBI accidentally, one assumes, took one of Instapaper's servers.
Instapaper, if you guys don't know, it's like it's Read Later. If it's a little bookmarklet, you put it in your browser, you click Read Later, and they give you a nice list of what you can read later. Problem, Marco
Arment. A lot of
Arment,
apps also have Instapaper integration.
There's a lot of those things, but Marco Arment on his blog, he makes Instapaper explained how his server was stolen, which is just kind of amusing. I mean, I guess people just grabbing servers, like, yeah, that one. That must be that one.
Well, yeah, Digital One, which hosted the server, they're a Swiss company that hosted the server in Virginia, has not responded to him last we looked. On his website, he's like, yeah, they won't get back to me, but the server's down and it's presumably gone. It's presumably not there. He's like, I think it's too much of a coincidence that Digital One was the subject of a raid and all of a sudden my server has just been disappeared off the internet.
Right.
I think the FBI has my server, and which means they have all the data of all the Instapaper subscribers. That's, and as he points out in his blog, he does SHA-1 encryption of your password, but they still have in clear text anybody's user ID and all the links you've bookmarked. And it's the FBI.
He sounds pretty jaded. I love this. Due to the police culture of the United States, especially at the federal level, I don't expect to ever get an explanation for this, have the server or its data returned, or be reimbursed for the damage they have illegally caused. So I guess he listens to us enough. Like, yeah, it's never going to happen.
Well, and I wonder if it's, sometimes these hosting companies will split up one server into virtual servers. Maybe he was on a virtual server. Somebody in the chat room says Pinboard suffered the same thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've got a few different servers on one server and maybe didn't admit that to Instapaper, who thought they were paying for a dedicated server. Mm. And then all of a sudden they take one, they take all the virtual ones on there as well. Which could, I'm just totally speculating, this is not necessarily fact, but it could explain why Digital One doesn't want to talk about it.
This is a great PR time for some other hosting service to be like, hey, Marco, we can help you with X host, whatever
it
is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, finally, Alfred Poor, who blogs over for Green Horizon at HP, this is an official HP blog, was talking about frustration with all the different mobile devices that you have to plug in and all your... If you're like me, you've got a drawer full of like 30 power supplies from all the devices you've ever owned. He says that IEEE's Universal Power Adapter for Mobile Devices Working Group is developing not just a new standard for mobile devices, but one that would work for laptops, tablets, desktops, pretty much any electronics device that requires between 10 and 240 watts of power. This has been going on for a while. I just found out about it by looking at a Slashdot post that pointed to Alfred's blog post, but I'm tantalized by the possibility of being able to just have one power adapter.
It's 2011. 2011, we don't have universal standards when it comes to that. I mean, I don't know. I know that Microsoft just recently unveiled like its own patent for batteries where you could actually put them in any which way so that it doesn't matter the configuration, and that would work. So it took us this long to come up with some pretty simple concepts. So this idea that this could happen, I mean, the laptop power supply being the same, I mean, it's happened with phones. I mean, a lot of them are using micro USB. There's a standards commission for that. But this is IEEE, and they are behind things like... Well, FireWire 1394 and a whole bunch of other things. So this might take a long time before we see it.
But I would still love it, especially the idea of having one power adapter that could power multiple devices. So I just have a few cords coming out of one wall socket. I don't have to daisy chain 16 different...
Would companies allow that, though? Do they make enough profit margin on this stupid
MagSafe? That's what I would say is they...
Apple, I'm looking at you.
They probably make... Well, I don't know. I don't know how much money they make off of...
You know what Apple likes to do?
I lost my cable.
They like
to
not
one.
Include a cable. No HDMI cable in your Apple TV when you buy it. You got to provide it yourself. That's one less cable. They're like, yeah, just go out and buy yourself a universal adapter. We don't have to provide it.
Well, but the MagSafe is patented, so you can't even use that.
Yeah, well... We'll see. Maybe they'll donate their patent to IEEE.
Yeah, okay.
Tom, I like your optimism.
Thank you.
This is it's a very good idea in theory.
I like whatever you're on. I'd have some too.
Never happen. On to the news fuse. According to U.S. District Judge Phyllis Hamilton, Apple will probably not be able to stop Amazon from using App Store What does Judge Hamilton know? Well, she's the judge hearing the case, so she probably has an idea of how she'll rule. However, that hasn't stopped Apple from sending another cease and desist letter, this time to Amahi for using App Store. That is the nature of trademark law. Sue people or lose your rights until you're out of time.
Audio and ebook versions of Harry Potter are finally coming. J.K. Rowling has announced that the story will become part of an online reading experience unlike any other called Pottermore. There, Rowling will spill some information about the Harry Potter universe as well as interact with readers because, of course, they're going to be wanting more. The last Harry Potter's in
July. So I'm going to be able to get a Kindle version and an Audible version of this stuff, right?
The audio and ebooks will actually be distributed via Pottermore.
Oh, jeez.
Which
that's
opens
an experience
this
unlike any other. So
that's why. Pottermore.
Right.
You can't get it.
You can't go anywhere else.
It was kind of hosted on a Sony site, so maybe it's for their reader. So
no,
I'm not sure.
Right. It's going to be limited to a certain reader.
Point-and-shoot cameras have become really super tiny, but cameras with interchangeable lenses have tended to be quite large. Pentax has announced its solution, the Pentax Q. It shoots pics at 12 megapixels, and while the Q can change lenses, its image sensor is usually found in point-and-shoot cameras, so it may be all right.
Rumor has it that Asus is working on a 13-inch Android-powered laptop. Considering the company already has a 10.1-inch Android tablet with a removable keyboard, doesn't seem like it would be that large of an engineering feat for Asus. The 13-inch laptop is rumored to cost under $300.
Yahoo shareholders may still have questions about Carol Bartz's leadership of the company, but the board is backing her. Speaking at the annual shareholders meeting, Yahoo chairman Roy Bostock said, "We are confident that Yahoo is headed in the right direction," adding that Bartz has the board's full support. Hopefully it's different than the full support Terry Semel received at the 2007 shareholders meeting, because he was replaced a week after that.
So just pat her on the back as she's leaving the room.
Yeah.
When people get bored, they read website code. I mean, that's what I do. But Florian Rohrweck, good luck with that
or
one.
They read Florian's last name.
Exactly. Was looking at some Google profile code and noticed a label with a note. It said, "Show people who have added you to circles," and several other references to some kind of circles in relation to contacts. What could these circles mean? Perhaps it's Google's social circle.
Ooh.
Or maybe Google's responsible for all those crop circles.
Probably
I'm not sure yet.
Probably both. Viacom can't make up its mind. I love this iPad streaming. I hate this. On the one hand, it has asked for a pause in its lawsuit against Time Warner for streaming cable TV to iPads in a paying subscriber's home. That seems positive, like they're going to work out an agreement. But right after that, Viacom filed suit against Cablevision for doing exactly the same thing. If we had to guess, we're assuming any deal with Time Warner will immediately be forced on Cablevision. Because, you know what? Viacom loves a lawsuit. They kind of do.
Viacom.
It's one of their things.
Plants vs. Zombie Maker Pop Games. Kind of having a good day. It's about to be bought at over $1 billion by Electronic Arts. PopCap is rumored to earn about $100 to $150 million per year.
Wow.
So EA must see something long-term to justify this purchase price. Hopefully it means crossovers like Bejeweled, now with more John Madden.
Plants vs. Zombies, first-person shooter. Can't wait for that. All right, on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Wired is running a story that was submitted on our subreddit by Pete C. Thank you, Pete C. With some pickup lines for the Twitter set. By day, Twitter is a microblogging site, writes Megan Myers, but by night, it's a micro bar scene. Here are some at replies that she picks out. "You had me at your impeccable spelling and correct use of grammar."
Oh, come on.
That must apply to 1% of all Twitter users.
"Is your name Google? Because you have everything
if
I'm searching for."
If someone said, "Do you believe in Inception? Because you're always in my dreams," I would unfollow them.
"If I could be an enzyme, I would be DNA helicase." Wait. "So I could unzip your genes."
This doesn't sound like pickup lines for Twitter. It sounds like just really bad science
nerdy,
lab
yeah.
room pickup lines. Oh, no,
"Are you a 90-degree angle? Because you looking right." Yeah.
That was the one
I
was going to say.
"Is there a ninja in your pants? Because your butt is kicking."
"Baby, you're the student and I'm the math book. You solve all my problems." Yeah, that's
these are really bad.
But they all fit within the 140 characters. I think that's the key here.
But I guess pickup lines are just bad anyway, so they're just shorter pickup lines.
Right. They're more concise. They get to the point.
"Hey, want to go out?" That's short enough to fit.
Yeah. Hashtag please.
It's quicker for you to get to the point of throwing the drink in their face.
Hashtag so lonely.
Call me. On to the calendar.
Today would have been Alan Turing's 99th birthday.
It is his 99th birthday. He's just not alive.
Right. So happy birthday, Alan.
And thanks for inventing modern computing.
Yeah, he's the grandfather of it, in fact.
Grandpappy.
Alan, we miss you. Happy 99th. Sonic the Hedgehog also has a birthday.
Ooh, how old is Sonic?
He's 20.
Makes Alan look old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it makes Sonic sound
Sonic's
old, too.
Fictional.
He's alive.
Sonic is like graduated from high school. He's like a bio major now.
Next year, Sonic's 21st, going out drinking.
Woo! Oh, yeah.
Just drinking with tails.
Gonna start, woo! Just rolling down the street. Crazy. Hulu Plus app has launched for Android. That ought to make you happy, Jason.
Sure.
I think it works on 6 devices, though. So.
I'm not with
Do you have one of the 6 models?
I actually didn't. I just assumed that I didn't, so I didn't check. And it doesn't look like I do.
Way to be happy about
wah,
this.
Wah.
The HTC Evo View 4G Fire is headed to Sprint tomorrow, June 24th. Wi-Fi only Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 is hitting Sprint tomorrow, also June 24th.
That's silly because it's just Wi-Fi only. But they'll sell you an Overdrive.
Yeah. Sold separately.
Yeah.
The LA Noire is coming to the PC this fall. Currently only you can play it, via...
consoles.
But is it...
It's on PlayStation 3.
PlayStation. Yeah. Is it anywhere else? I thought it was just PlayStation.
I don't know offhand.
PlayStation. An Apple television is coming in 2012. It's official, so says Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster.
Oh, Gene Munster.
Oh, Mr. Munster, you're nuts.
Is there no rumor
or
you
are
can't spread?
You?
Oh, he actually is right sometimes.
If you keep saying it every
Except
year, it's going to be right one day.
I would like to see an Apple television. So, Gene, I hope you're right.
I think it would be an Apple television with a removable Apple TV module. So you could upgrade, because they want to sell you more than one Apple TV more often than you would buy a whole television.
I'm seeing a giant iMac. That's it. Here we go. With put a computer and a display together. How do we do it?
It's like you
just
can
make
already
touch
kind of have a television. Just hook up something to your
multi-touch
Apple TV.
Television.
There you got an Apple television.
There you go.
On to voicemail. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number, or you can email us a link to an uploaded MP3 file or audio file like this voicemailer did.
Hey guys, it's Connor from London here. In yesterday's show, Ayaz made the valid point that the closed-door meetings between the UK government and industry groups to discuss possible censorship of the internet in the UK were just a proposal. However, it's worth remembering that in April 2010, the UK's controversial Digital Economy Bill, which included the UK's now famous Three Strikes Law, was also just a proposal. The bill faced significant opposition from ISPs, members of Parliament and the public. Groups opposed to the bill even ran adverts in national newspapers. But despite its controversial nature, it and 10 other bills were rushed through Parliament into law during the legislative wash-up period just before the general election last year. Despite widespread and valid objections, those proposals are now law.
Yeah, it's a very good point and well made. Thank you for that cogent, cohesive, and coherent
and
voicemail.
Polite.
And very polite.
That was a triple C voicemail right there.
And I think that's what, you know, the behind closed doors nature of it, for one, has people up in arms. Like, look, this, if you're going to talk public policy, even if it's voluntary, if the government's involved, we want to know about it. But also this idea that in public they discussed the digital entertainment bill and it was widely opposed and they shoved it through anyway.
Yeah, I mean, proposals can go one of two ways. That's flat out. Hopefully this doesn't work as well as the DEA did.
On to the emails, tnt@twit.tv. Neardog sent us a reminder about this upcoming and awesome yearly event.
Something is happening. For the fourth year in a row, the time has come. Summer, boredom is in another castle. Mario Marathon 4, benefiting Child's Play Charity.
Yeah! Woo! Begins tomorrow, June 24th, MarioMarathon.com. It's always fun to watch these guys. They play every Mario game you could possibly conceive. The longer they play, the more money they raise for Child's Play, which is a good charity. They provide games for sick children, so it goes to a good cause. Thanks, Neardog, for the heads up. Appreciate that.
That's awesome. Next email from Luke. Hi, TNT Squad. I have an idea of how to use the Best Buy Music Cloud for free. Just cut your songs into 30-second clips, and kapow! You now can listen to the whole song for free. Now I can listen to Iron Butterfly, and Inagata Dada Vida.
Inagata Dada Vida, baby.
Oh, whatever.
Don't you know?
35 easy tracks. It's been a while. Okay. Sure, Luke.
That's one of those because you can. I mean, if you really want to take advantage of Best
Boredom is in Luke's castle.
Well, maybe he can come up with a script and he can open source that script. Yeah. Here you go. Cut up your stuff and
way to think outside the box, Luke.
All right. Thanks to everybody for submitting stories on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. AJ Nath submitted the top vote-getting story, which we haven't talked about, but Microsoft says, we can hand over your Office 365 data without your permission pretty much anytime we want. It's a story by Zach Whitaker on ZDNet. He found these details hidden within a white paper detailing the security features in the upcoming Office 365 suite. It reveals links to the Trust Center, a treasure trove of data protection policies and legalities on how Microsoft will handle your data in its cloud data centers. So if you're thinking about using Microsoft 365, you might want to know that Microsoft may need to disclose data without your prior consent. And that's something to take into consideration when you're picking a cloud service. We get all excited about Dropbox possibly just having bad security policies or handing over data with a subpoena. This is just as bad, if not worse. Also, big thanks to Douglas Belcher letting us know that the U.S. is taking up overhaul of the patent system. Hope that works out. we're really for that.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
PY Spud, iLark Solutions, PC Guy 999, PC, of course, PC Guy 999 again, MM Knox, KE4KTZ, and Tola, and a bunch of other people's submitting stories on the Reddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Go there to submit stories or even just to vote stories up or down, because we do take this into account when we create our lineup, and it's very helpful to have that input. Technewstoday.reddit.com. And buy a brick, for goodness sake. They're almost all gone. There's probably like, what, two left?
I wanted to buy one, but I would prefer that you guys do it.
Bricks.twit.tv is the place to go. You buy a brick, it goes into our new studio and lasts there forever. Mm-hmm. It's like building the Colossus or the Colosseum or the pyramids. Okay, it's not exactly
kind
like
of.
That.
Or you can just say hi to your mom.
Or it's a brick.
On a brick.
In our studio. But that's still kind of cool.
She'd like it.
So
I'm sure of it.
Go check it out. Thanks, everybody, for watching. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a message. You can even email us the message. But the phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. And we do listen to those, too. At least Iaz does. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I won't be here, but they'll talk to you tomorrow. That's right. Podcasters across borders, baby.
So we're within borders.
La-ti-da.
Just gonna cross borders.